Good evening. Please leave the light on. The second of our nightly vigils is to be held in the company of Count Alexis Tolstoy, cousin to the more famous Leo. He wrote this story, The Family of the Vordalak, in St. Petersburg in the late 1830s. At the time, he was abused in the press for such morbid fantasies, which were attributed to overindulgence in opium. The Count died bankrupt of an overdose of morphine. His story, however, lives on. I will not bore you with the details of my journey, nor with the observations I made on the Hungarians and the Serbians. One day, I arrived in a small village. I found those who lived in the house where I intended to stay in a state of confusion. I was about to withdraw when a man of about 30 came up to me and shook me by the hand. Come in, stranger, he said. Don't let yourself be put off by our sadness. He then told me about how his father, whose name was Gorsha, had got up one morning and taken down his long Turkish arquebus. My children, he had said to his two sons, George and Pierre, I'm going to the mountains to join the hunt for that brigand Ali Beg. Wait for me patiently for 10 days, and if I do not return on the 10th, arrange for a funeral mass to be said, for by then I will have been killed. But if I should return after the 10 days have passed, do not under any circumstances let me come in. Forget that I was once your father and pierce me through the heart with an aspen stake, for then I would no longer be human. I would be a cursed Vordalak come to suck your blood. Both sons begged him to let them go in his place, but he turned his back on them and set out for the mountains. The day I arrived in the village was the very day that Gorsha had fixed for his return. George, the older of the two sons, was a serious and decisive man. His brother Pierre, a handsome youth, appeared to be the favourite of their sister, Sedenka, who was a genuine Slavic beauty. I had not been talking with Sedenka for more than 2 minutes when I already felt for her an affection that threatened to become something deeper. We were all sitting in front of the house. Suddenly, George broke the silence. Wife, he said, at exactly what time did the old man set out?
At 8 o'clock. I can clearly remember hearing the monastery bell.
Just at that moment, I heard the sound of the bell ringing 8. We saw a human figure coming out of the darkness of the forest and approaching us.
It is he! God be praised! Cried Sedenka.
The human form came closer. It was a tall, old man with a pale, stern face. He stopped and stared at his family with eyes that seemed not to see. They were dull, glazed, deep sunk in their sockets. Well, well, he said in a dead voice, will no one get up to welcome me? The family went to bed in a part of the house which was separated from my room only by a narrow partition. I overheard confused voices from the other side. Go to sleep, wife, said George. And you, Sedenka, do not worry. I will watch over you.
Brother,
put in Sedenka in her sweetest voice, there is no need to keep watch at all. Father is already asleep. He seems calm and peaceful enough.
Neither of you understands what is going on, said George.
Soon sleep began to take possession of my senses. I thought I saw the door of my room opening slowly, and old Gorsha standing in the doorway. I felt his dead eyes trying to penetrate my deepest thoughts. With extreme care, he began to walk towards me. With a superhuman effort, I managed to wake up. There was nobody in my room, but as I looked towards the window, I could distinctly see old Gorsha's face pressed against the glass from outside. He moved away from the window and I could hear his footsteps in the neighbouring room. The child coughed, and I could make out Gorsha's voice. You are not asleep, little one.
No, Grandpapa, replied the child, and I would so like to talk to you.
I thought I could hear Gorsha chuckle as the child got out of bed. I got up and banged my fist against the partition. Wake up, I cried. Only George showed any sign of movement.
Where's the old man? He murmured blearily.
Quick, I yelled, he's just taken away your child.
Georges sprinted in the direction of the dark forest. We all assembled in front of the house, and after a few minutes of anxious waiting, we saw Georges return with his son. Gorcha himself had disappeared. The next day, I learned that the River Danube had begun to freeze over. Drift ice now blocked my route. The highway was expected to be blocked for some days. In any case, I could not think of leaving. Even if I could have left, curiosity would have held me back. Besides, the more I saw Sedenka, the more I felt I was falling in love with her. At nightfall, we had still discovered nothing about old Gorcha. When at last sleep began to confuse my thoughts, I again felt that the old man was coming towards me. I opened my eyes and saw his waxen face pressed against my window. I heard him wandering round the house and tapping gently on the window of George's room. The child groaned and woke up. "Is that you, Grandpapa?" he asked. "It is me," replied the dead man. "But I dare not go outside. Papa has forbidden it." "There is no need to go outside. Just open the window and embrace me." I leapt to the partition and struck it hard with my fist. In no time at all, the household was gathered round the child. He was very weak and breathed with difficulty. At daybreak, I could hear the women sobbing. The child was dead. All these happenings did not prevent my passion for Sedenka from developing more and more. In the daytime, I couldn't talk to her alone. When the whole family had gone to bed, I saw that Sedenka's door was slightly ajar. I pushed open the door and went in. All she was wearing was a nightgown of red silk. She looked more beautiful than ever. "Why have you come? What will the family think of me if we are discovered?" "Sedenka, I will not leave you until you have promised to love me forever. I love you more than my soul. My life's blood is yours. May I not be granted 1 hour with you in return?" Suddenly, she began to tremble and look towards the window, terror-struck. I followed her gaze and clearly saw the corpse-like face of Gorcha staring at us. At precisely that moment, I felt a heavy hand on my shoulder. It was Georges. He said to me, quite calmly, "My dear guest, I have been to the river. The ice has gone, the road is clear. Nothing now prevents you from leaving. There is no need," he added, glancing at Sedenka, "to take your leave of my family." After 6 months, when I was recalled home, I no longer even thought about Sedenka or her family. But one evening, when I was riding in the countryside, I heard a bell ringing the 8 o'clock chime. I seemed to recognize that sound. In no time at all, I reached the monastery gate. The old hermit welcomed me. I asked if there was any accommodation available in the village.
"You can stay where you like in the village," replied the old hermit. "Thanks to the devil Gorcha, there are plenty of empty houses."
"What on earth do you mean?" I asked. "Is old Gorcha still alive?"
"Oh no, he's well and truly buried with a stake through his heart, but he rose from the grave to suck the blood of Georges's little son. The child returned one night and knocked on the door, crying that he was cold and wanted to come home. His foolish mother did not have the strength of mind to send him back to the cemetery. They all went the same way."
"And Sedenka?"
"Oh, she went mad with grief, poor child. Do not speak to me of her."
The word terror has always had the effect on me that a battle cry has on a war horse. I set out immediately to see for myself. The village was deserted. I reached Georges's. Still no sign of life. All the rooms were empty. But Sedenka's showed signs of occupation. Some of her clothes were draped carelessly over the bed. I wrapped myself in my cloak and stretched out on her bed. Soon I was asleep. I dreamed of Sedenka as beautiful, as simple, and as loving as she had been when I first met her. I opened my eyes. There was Sedenka standing beside me. "Sedenka," I cried, sitting up. "Is it really you?" She looked so ravishing that my vague sense of foreboding turned into a strong desire to remain near her. A strange, almost sensual feeling. Part fear, part excitement filled my whole being. With her beautiful blonde hair falling loose over her shoulders, with her jewels sparkling in the moonlight, she was quite irresistible. Abandoning all restraint, I took her in my arms. Then a strange thing happened. As I held Sedenka against me, one of the points of the cross I wore around my neck stuck sharply into my chest. It affected me like a ray of light passing right through my body. Looking up at Sedenka, I saw for the first time her features, though still beautiful, were those of a corpse. That her eyes did not see, and that her smile was the distorted grimace of a decaying skull. I turned away from Sedenka to hide the horror which was written on my face. I looked out of the window and saw the satanic figure of Gorsha leaning on a bloody stake and staring at me with the eyes of a hyena. Pressed against the other window were the waxen features of Georges. Time to make for home, I said to myself. Turning back to Sedenka, I raised my voice so that her hideous family would be sure to hear me. I must go and see whether my horse needs feeding. I beg you to stay where you are and to wait for me to come back. I then pressed my mouth against her cold, dead lips and left the room. I found my horse in a panic. I vaulted into the saddle and dug my spurs into my horse's flanks. As I rode out of the gate, I just had time to glimpse a whole crowd gathered round the house, many of them with their faces pressed against the windows. I heard a fearful noise behind me. 1,000 discordant voices shrieked, moaned, and contended with one another. And I heard a rhythmic stamping, like a troop of foot soldiers advancing in double quick time. I spurred on my horse. A burning fever coursed through my veins. I heard a voice behind me which cried out, "Stop! Don't leave me, dearest! I love you more than my soul! Turn back! Turn back! Your life's blood is mine!" A cold breath brushed my ear, and I sensed that Sedenka had leapt on my horse from behind. "My heart! My soul!" she cried. Twisting her arms around me, she tried to sink her teeth into my neck and to wrench me from my horse. There was a terrible struggle, but eventually I managed to grab hold of her by curling one arm around her waist and knotting the other hand in her hair. Standing bolt upright in my stirrups, I threw her to the ground. Then I became delirious. Frenzied shapes pursued me. Georges and his brother Pierre ran beside the road and tried to block my way. I looked over my shoulder and caught sight of old Gorsha, who was using his stake to propel himself forward. I do not know what happened after that. But when I regained consciousness, it was daylight, and I found myself lying near the road next to my horse. So ended a love affair, which should perhaps have cured me forever of the desire to become involved in any others. As it was, heaven did not allow things to come to that. But I still shudder at the thought that if I had given in to my enemies, I would myself have become a vampire. Tomorrow night, we shall meet the Horla. Sleep well. If you can.
David Tennant was the reader, and the stories are abridged by Robin Brooks. The programme was produced by Clive Brill for Pacificus Productions and BBC Radio 4.